Blog Talk Radio.
Well, Harvey went into the ocean, turned around, and is coming back up and is headed north into Louisiana. In the meantime, Houston is still starting to respond, starting to react to the higher waters that are coming in. It's been doing that for a couple of days, but that kind of thing is as they say, unprecedented. The highest amount of rain fall from a storm seen in the United States, lower 48, and really I think about a half of an inch less than a Hawaiian hurricane. So rain is going away, and you've got everything turning into Alabama, Florida, Louisiana. Some of the amounts in Louisiana over 18 inches, other parts over 17 inches, 16 inches, 15 inches, 14 inches, et cetera, et cetera. Mississippi getting hit, and then the top rain amount, 51.88 inches. So Donald Trump came down and looked around and is encouraging people. And so anyway, good morning to you, Kelly O'Connell. And second to last show, tomorrow is the last show, Death Row Radio at its very best. And we will continue the fight on Blog Talk Radio. And it is certainly possible that Adams Radio would pick up the talk format. I mean, I don't see why they wouldn't pick it up, because the audience is just sitting there and is a fairly large audience. And so we'll see what happens on that. In the meantime, I am starting to fantasize, or have been fantasizing, about sleeping in. Hope you're well. Hope you're well out there. So what do you think they should do to these looters? Some people were saying it should be a life sentence for anyone caught looting in the middle of this storm. Really sad. What do you think of the mayor? Is the mayor guilt-free? Is he guilt-free? Or is the mayor have some responsibility in this. Supposedly, I don't know how true this is. I'd never heard of the mayor before. The mayor before this was a lesbian lady. I can't remember her name, but she was the one who had said that she wanted copies of all of the sermons of the ministers in town so that she could check them for homophobia. But this gentleman is, like Barack Obama, a product of Harvard Law School. He's African American. And one of the questions that was being asked was whether that party had influenced him to resist the directions from the governor, which turned out to be 1,000% accurate. Whether he was encouraged to not follow the request to evacuate from the governor. Now here's a weird story. Houston residents rescuing stranded bats, drowning bats. This is weird. This just came out from CBS News. Houston residents saving bats from drowning. Wabridge is home to an estimated 250,000 Mexican bats. And what they're doing is getting a net on a pole to catch these critters and pull them up and put them on the side of the bridge. So the fight goes on. Here's a little bit on the failure of these dams. Attucks Dam, two dams in there, massive lakes there that are dammed up, and they were overflowing. Here's a little bit from yesterday.
News for this besieged city. Fox News can confirm that the spillover of the Attucks Dam, for which we are about a block away from, is now imminent. It's not a matter of if. It is going to happen. We just spoke moments ago. I spoke on the phone with Jeff Lindner of the Harris County Emergency Office of Emergency Management, and he told me that they are less than a half a foot away for that reservoir from spilling over and affecting dramatically the neighborhood immediately behind me. He said second story homes will be at risk. That has never happened in history, that the dams, the reservoir, the Attucks and Barker Reservoir dams protect the city, downtown Houston, from the floods, and that is going to spill over today. Now, he did tell me, in terms, this does not mean that downtown Houston is going to be wiped out, but it does tell me that they are in uncharted territory as uncontrolled water will begin to spill over, in his words, by daylight over the dam just blocks away from me.
From yesterday, and here's a little bit from PBS on the dams, and this is also from yesterday.
Deepens by the day as Tropical Storm Harvey lurks just offshore. More than 3,500 people have been rescued, and officials have confirmed 4 deaths, but expect more. One town east of Houston has already gotten nearly 52 inches of rain, a record for the U.S. mainland. As much as 30% of Harris County, which covers more than 1,700 square miles and is home to Houston, is now underwater. And more is washing into the city itself. PJ Tobia begins our coverage.
Images of a region pushed to the brink. Torrents poured through parts of downtown Houston as a pair of aging dams overflowed. Rescue crews had worked through the night with flood victims crowding onto dump trucks heading for higher ground. Some waited until morning only to see the water climb higher.
It had quit raining and the water had gone down. We thought we were okay until the fire department came and told us they were going to reopen the dams and they were going to reflood everything. So I said, let's go.
I've been here 2 years. This is my second flood. I've lost my car twice. So I'm a little bit overwhelmed. I'm not sure what the next step is.
All right, so we may have even listened to that yesterday, but I've got another clip for you here from the health hazards that are associated with these floods, and then a little bit on Harvey slamming into Louisiana. So, anyway, the immediate threat of rain is going away, or I should say the rain threat is going away, but there is an immediate threat of these high waters going higher still. Here's from Health Hazards in Houston from Fox.
In the aftermath of Hurricane Harvey, Health and Human Services Secretary Dr. Tom Price declares a public health emergency in Texas. The nation's medical personnel are now on high alert to jump into action as needed. Many health concerns can pop up after a devastating hurricane like this one. Floodwater can carry disease. This is a bigger issue in developing countries where yellow fever, cholera, or typhoid are lurking. In the U.S., residents commonly suffer from diarrhea or other gastrointestinal issues if they or their food or drinks come into contact with contaminated water. Exposure to water polluted with chemicals or sewage could also lead to developing a rash or ear, nose, or throat infection. Staying in shelters in close proximity to other people can also spread germs. It's important to wash your hands and use antibacterial gel. Plus, water should be boiled for some time while officials determine its safety. As people return back to their flooded homes, mold can become a problem. It grows quickly in warm places like Texas and can trigger allergies or asthma. And the Food and Drug Administration recommends throwing away any medications or foods that came in contact with floodwater to prevent infection. Standing water left behind by the storm could also cause the perfect breeding spot for mosquitoes. The CDC recommends using sprays with DEET to keep the bugs away and prevent Zika and West Nile virus from spreading. West Nile cases doubled after Hurricane Katrina. Emotional and mental stress can also become a problem. Flooding can bring on depression and anxiety and affect sleeping, eating, and doing everyday activities. Post-traumatic stress disorder could develop in days, weeks, or months, and is a real concern for residents who experienced Hurricane Harvey's devastation. It's important to seek out professional help to be properly evaluated.
I'm sure it is. So what's going on there now is more of the same. The waters have not gone away, and it is not even clear if they've started to recede yet. I haven't seen any stories on that. Let's take our first break here and get on to a few more Harvey stories. And then anything you guys want to talk about, 523-1450 and 805-61802. Text, got a little bit of Jackson Brown here. Of missing persons. In honor of our missing radio station here, a radio format, 523-1450. We'll be back. So we know that the president went to see Harvey, and then there was a lot of criticism from the mainstream media on him showing up. So first, where is Harvey headed? It went out to the ocean. They were afraid it was going to come back over Houston, but it's headed towards Louisiana.
Holy state under threat tonight. Tropical Storm Harvey is about to slam Louisiana, but it's already triggering heavy rain and evacuations. And it's also triggering so much more. Special fear in New Orleans, where Hurricane Katrina struck 12 years ago today, and there are fears about the pumps that are supposed to keep the city safe. ABC's Gio Benitez is there in New Orleans tonight.
Tonight, in and around the Big Easy, residents all too familiar with flooding are once again using sandbags on the 12th anniversary of Hurricane Katrina.
Brought back a lot of memories. Really evoked a lot of emotions and heartbreak.
As the flash flood watch extends from Texas through Louisiana all the way to the Florida Panhandle.
We're asking everybody just to stay alert and to stay vigilant tonight.
Harvey expected to make landfall near the Texas-Louisiana state line. Evacuations there overnight. Our Steve Olson saw me with some of those families.
We're at the Lake Charles Convention Center, where they're already moving families from other shelters to this one because of rising waters around those buildings. But just outside is another body of water, a lake, that they're going to have to watch carefully tonight.
And a concern here in New Orleans, problems with 14 water pumps last week.
This is one of the main pumping stations here in New Orleans, and you can just see the rainwater drains into this canal and then is pumped out into the lake. Now, one of the pumps here overheated earlier, and so now engineers are working around the clock to make sure as many pumps as possible are working here.
Residents tonight counting on those pumps working. Bob Ruppel survived Katrina. He lost everything 12 years ago.
Are you worried about the pumps failing, even in this storm?
Oh, Lord, yeah. It's not something you want to hear.
And Gio Benitez joins us live now in front of one of those pumps, keeping New Orleans safe. Gio, how confident are officials in all of those pumps tonight?
Well, Tom, as this rain comes down here, they're feeling very confident about it. They've got 120 pumps here. Most of them are working, but about a dozen of them are not. And so officials are trying to get those fixed right now, Tom.
Gio Benitez for us tonight. Gio, thank you. And as we reported, the historic flooding from Tropical Storm Harvey has transformed the city. Take a look just behind me. You can see what looks like to be a river with the downtown skyscrapers there in the background. And here is the same scene before Harvey. It's really a very popular park, Eleanor Tinsley. The change in landscape is staggering. And this storm is not done yet. ABC senior meteorologist Rob Marciano joins us now from Katy, Texas, with a tropical storm Harvey still has in store. Rob.
Lifting now, but the winds are picking up. It's actually strengthened. Harvey has 50-mile-an-hour winds. Now it's about 50 miles south of Port Arthur, Texas, and heading towards the border. Should make landfall over Sabine Pass. Look at the heavy rain falling right now across eastern parts of Louisiana. The heaviest, though, will be across southwest Louisiana as this thing comes on shore tonight and then passes Alexandria. A lot of that moisture then getting up into the mid-Mississippi Valley. Heavy rain, of course, with this. We have widespread flash flood watches out, 5 to 10 inches falling, most of that east of Houston. So here the threat is over, but as you know, the water in many areas still rising. Tom?
Millions still in the path. All right, Rob, thank you. And a programming note tonight on Thursday.
All right, so it's headed that way. And so what is in store for the Harveyites, the Houstonians? A lot of people don't have insurance.
Oh, my God.
For victims of Harvey tonight, heartbreak.
I've lost my home and I'm thankful my children are safe. It's just, I have nowhere to go.
The painful reality for every 6 homes in the Houston area, only one has flood insurance. Ruben Amador escaped as his house went underwater.
All my assets in my house, all gone, with no insurance.
Nice to have you guys here.
We met him at a furniture store turned makeshift shelter with his brother's family.
What are we going to do now? I have no idea.
Even those with flood insurance like the Jones and Grace families, anxious. Why? 5 years after Superstorm Sandy, some homeowners in New York and New Jersey are still waiting for insurance checks from that storm.
They're going to have thousands of people to help, so it's going to be a wait.
Even just 1 inch of water can cost more than $20,000 in damage. And tonight, many victims are only just learning homeowners insurance does not cover a flood created by Mother Nature. It's only covered by a federal government flood insurance program, and that program runs out of money at the end of next month, unless Congress takes action.
I feel so sorry for these people. Unfortunately, a lot of them are going to have to struggle with getting their full claims paid. They shouldn't have to, so FEMA should step in and help them right now.
To make matters worse here in Texas, there's a filing deadline this Friday. After that, a new state law goes into effect that may make it more difficult to challenge an insurance company estimate of what a homeowner is owed. Kerry Sanders, NBC News, Cuero, Texas.
Hey, NBC News fans, thanks for checking out our...
All right, so what kind of stuff are these guys dealing with right now? Well, first of all, we don't know how many dead people are going to be left over. That's the most obvious effect right now is whoever did not make it. They found a woman with a baby. The baby was alive, and it was the mother and the daughter, I think, mother or child. And the child survived and the mother didn't. I mean, talk about tragic. So there's got to be, you know, I mean, an unbelievable number of victims, not just the dead, but also people that are injured out there. There's still got to be tens of thousands of people trapped in their houses. So how long is it going to take for the waters to recede? You know, well, let's come back and talk about that just a little bit. Here is some local news for you and some Jackson Brown. Jackson Brown wrote this song about a fellow musician who was the leader of a band called Little Feet, who had died suddenly. Great song. I remember the first time I heard it on FM, sat up in bed, couldn't believe the piano, how it started. Jackson Brown's kind of famous for writing dedications to deceased friends. So 6:29, you've got some local news for you. Kelly O'Connell, 523-1450 and 805-6180. Be right back.
It was his angel, and sorrow was his star. Those of us who follow might hope to reach as far. They're walking slow in Houston, speechless in D.C. There's no way I could tell you what he meant to me.
Hey, Kelly, this is Kathy.
Hey, what's up?
This might not be the time for this, and I know you've got tomorrow after this, but, you know, it's time the federal government got out of the flood insurance business. The insurance companies 15 years ago, 20 years ago, got lobbyists together and dumped it all on the federal government, and people are building in places where they have no business building, below sea level, and expecting the government to bail them out every time this happens. The time is, if it was private insurance, the insurance company would just simply tell you you can't get insurance at that, in that location. You know, like I said, it might not be the time for it. We got a lot of rescuing, a lot of construction, blah, blah, blah. But they should not be rebuilding in these coastal areas like the Ninth Ward in New Orleans. I mean, they flooded out completely. They'll build there again. It's ridiculous that this keeps going on.
You want to say that on the air?
No, but it's because it's not, you know, everybody's worried about everybody getting out right now, and maybe that's not something to bring up right now. But eventually, they're going to have to face the fact that the coastal flooding is going to continue and the sea level is just getting higher for whatever reason. It just needs to be addressed sooner or later. That the government can't keep bailing you out when you choose to build 2 feet below sea level on the coast.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Anyhow, I'm going to miss you, Kelly. Wish you were sticking around.
Well, you never know what the future holds.
That's true. That's true. Anyhow, take care.
Okay, thanks, Kat. All right, I was looking for a good clip on the effects of flooding, but just imagine this. Let's say there was a flood here and the flood was 5 or 10 feet high and the flood lasted for a couple of days. What would be the impacts? Well, you know, one of the impacts, the most obvious ones, is the building, the houses. What would be the impact on the house? I mean, how many houses would have to be gutted? How many houses would have to be razed, you know, destroyed? Mold is a very serious issue once a house gets wet. And also the electrical system of a house. But think about this, what they're dealing with in Houston right now, the failure of streets and bridges. So something is underwater, has a lot of water flowing over it. So you're talking about the reconstruction of a lot of streets and roads, in and of itself a very expensive undertaking. And then if you were going to save your house, you would have to go in and rip out the sheetrock, right, which had absorbed all of the water, plus whatever damage there was to the electrical system, plus everything in your house. You know, all of your furniture, your bedding. I mean, it would just be easier to start over in a lot of these instances, I think. So here's a little bit, and this is from 2014 in Minnesota, but the effects of a flood there.
The communities that saw some of the worst damage has a lot of cleanup and repairs still to do. This is what the area in and around Blakely looked like 2 months ago. Heavy rain washed out major roads, triggered mudslides, and flooded homes. Blakely is about an hour southwest of the Twin Cities. WCCO's Holly Wagner was there earlier today, and several roads still remain closed there, Holly.
Yeah, they do. You know, some of the cleanup list has started, but none of the repairs have on those roads. The detours are a daily inconvenience for a lot of people there.
I mean, and I don't want to get into another community's things, but I mean, just think about this. There have been important roads that have washed out in Houston. That alone will take months to take care of, right? Because they've got to shore up the foundation. A lot of the roads were undermined. I mean, I can't even imagine. It's got to be $1 trillion of damage. I mean, think of all the cars that are underwater right now. There's got to be, I had figured out there's 4 million cars in Houston. So are 1 million of them underwater? Are 2 million of them? So since the city did not evacuate, virtually anybody who didn't just leave off of instinct, which sounds like most people now, has probably lost a vehicle. I mean, it's going to be an economic event. It's going to bring money into the economy, but the devastation and the loss, I mean, you're never going to get a replacement, financial replacement for all the stuff. You know, there's many of these people don't have flood insurance, and somebody just called up and said, you know, we've got to get the federal government out of flood insurance and get people to stop building in floodplains, which is, I mean, that's a big thing to say during an emergency, but I think it's fundamentally true. You don't want people building in areas where disaster and loss are more likely. So let's, looking for another clip that's, what I want to know, and I don't know based on a story that I've seen today, but I know in general, I believe the water is still rising. I don't know if that's true, but that was my understanding of what was going on there. And then you've got all of the looting, and then you've got disease, and then you've got PTSD or psychological effects, stuff that our parents or grandparents wouldn't even have thought about. But there's got to be a psychological impact as well. But I mean, there's going to be also, like in New Orleans, there's going to be people that leave and say, I don't want to live here anymore. So it is going to be a slow rebuild. That's also going to be an impact on, for example, the price of gas, because how many structures in Houston have been affected by this flood? And, you know, there's major petroleum companies there that are converting oil to gasoline every day, et cetera, jet fuel. We'll take another break here and get your weather.
Mother's a survivor. She'll do what must be done. The children will revive her and help her see the sun. She almost knew that unison, but the singing stopped too soon. Now she shares the silence with a man up in the moon.
All right. So anyway, we'll get back to this, but we got today and tomorrow. I want to go back to some of the stuff that we were talking about because it's got an enormous amount of reaction from callers, and I think that it's important. Number one, I just got a text where somebody is trying to give me baby steps on what the Bible teaches and says it's not easy for you. I understand you're Catholic. I'm not Catholic. I've never said that I was Catholic. I was raised Catholic. I'm very, very familiar with Catholic doctrine, but I'm not Catholic. So, since we were talking about religion and it's a very robust and interesting topic, let's get back into it a little bit. What is the difference between, I'm Protestant. So what's the difference between Protestantism and Catholicism? I can just lay it out for you basically here. The Catholic Church defers to the side of the institution. People are saved through the church. Now, you can add a bunch of stuff to that, but if you boil it down, and there's some kind of intriguing ideas that the Catholics have put out, and there's also a lot of contradictory stuff because the church is so old and there have been so many different ideas that have been brought into the church, the Holy Roman Church. But you're really, and the Protestants on the other side put their faith in the sacred writings, the writings that came down, and you could do 100 shows just on the history of the Bible where There was the word was out there, it was kept orally, and then it was transferred to to written text in the Old Testament. The New Testament was a literary time, a literate time, I should say. So you don't have that same issue. But the Protestants would say the writings of God incorporate everything that's important for us to know. I put my faith in God through the his writings, the Bible. Now, the Catholics will say the Catholic Church invented the Bible. We wrote the Bible. We control the Bible. We control how the Bible is interpreted. And we add or subtract. If you look at the reaction to the Reformation, the Council of Trent, there was added the Apocrypha to the official Catholic Bible. But anyway, so I was thinking about this yesterday, that putting your faith in an institution versus putting yourself, your faith into a series of documents, really. And then the claim is that the documents were basically written by God through man, through inspiration, without getting too far into the details. The idea that human beings were under the influence of the Holy Spirit, and then when they wrote what they wrote, 40 people writing 60 books in the Bible. So I think I would just say this. To me, there's a danger in trusting an institution, because an institution, people can become corrupted. Institutions usually do become corrupt. It seems like corruption is a problem in the Catholic Church at the highest levels, right? I mean, you've got this gay cabal that they've talked about for decades, and, you know, the way that they've dealt with the abuse problems and some of the other issues that have come up in history. But there are a lot of people who will say, you know, I am a Catholic. I believe that the Pope is the vicar on earth of God. And if I follow the teachings of the Church, I believe I'll be saved. Now, the Church itself has stated that essentially all upstanding members of various religions around the world will be saved. That is getting back to the point of Kathleen talking about universal salvation. But there's a couple of problems there. And I mean, is atheism a religion? I think it is its own religion. So are good atheists saved? Are also good Muslims saved when they've gone into jihad and killed Christians or Jews simply because of their faith? They're following their faith. Do those people also go up and spend time with Jesus? 6:48, got a phone call. Thanks for the call to Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Hi, good morning, Kelly. It's Martin.
Hey, Marty, what's up?
The Protestants go by sola scriptura.
Right.
And what that means is they're going by, you're right, everybody is interpreting the Bible or the Lord's words in their own way. And that's why today there's more than 50,000 denominations of Christianity among Protestants. The Church, however, has had men and groups of men and women that have done nothing but dedicate their lives to studying Scripture. And that's what we base our faith on.
Right.
Okay.
So let me ask you this. What does it mean to be a good Catholic in a general sense?
Oh, man. I didn't see that one coming.
Well, you want someone who upholds there's these handful of, there's marriage, there is baptism, there is death rites, there's communion, there are this handful of things that every good Catholic is supposed to go through. Although
they're called sacraments.
Sacraments.
You can baptize Catholic.
Yeah.
You're Catholic, whether you like it or not.
Sounds like Islam. No, I used to have these friends in, you can't leave the faith. I used to have these friends back in Virginia when I was in grad school that I hung out with these guys, and they would always refer to me as a lapsed Catholic because it was a group of Catholic guys, and you know, we'd get together, have beer and pizza and everything. But so you're supposed
I think maybe you're missing my main point. That call, what, 2,000 years we have had countless thousands of men, and to a lesser extent women, who've done nothing, never got married, nothing, but dedicated their lives to interpreting the Bible. Then they would have conventions and councils, and then they would argue it and hammer it out.
Right, but you know,
say you're putting your trust in an institution. We're not putting it in an institution.
All right,
we're doing it on the most learned
All right. Let me ask you this, and that may be generally true, but let me ask you this. In the points of the Bible that would seem to where the Catholics would seem to deviate from the teaching of the Bible, how do you make an argument that the church is actually has a better understanding of God's things than God's word? How do you make that, you know?
Because that's subject to interpretation. I mean, that's why there's 50,000 denominations, and there's not a denomination of Catholics. Catholics are the church.
Well, I mean, well,
there's 50,000.
Well, wait a minute.
Spluttering. Look at the Presbyterian,
Methodist
today, this very day.
Yeah.
They're going through these huge civil wars because they can't get their act together. They got 50 million different interpretations of the Bible instead of basing it on the one true church.
Right, but. That has
there will never be homosexual priests.
Oh,
period.
Wait a second. There are a lot of homosexual priests, and you know it.
Oh, I'm sorry. We will never, theoretically, we will never have practicing homosexual priests. You're right. I totally stepped into that one.
Yeah, that was a soft. That was a softball.
It cannot be practiced.
But here is the issue: is that. You know, I mean, there have been divergent teachings in the Catholic Church itself than there are today. There were different teachings in the past. So
can you give me an example?
Well, sure. On dispensations, on the issue of dispensations and selling grace, that church no longer supports that. Yeah. So I think it's important to understand these things and not, you know, you need a friendly person to define what you believe. You don't need a critic. You know what I'm saying? We all need that. We all need someone who tries to have a positive understanding of what we believe so that we're not put in a bad light, but you've got to tap down into the basic argument. You're going to
and said, hey, all you got to do is believe in Jesus Christ and you're saved. That's sola scriptura. That's Protestantism.
Right.
We believe in being saved by faith and work.
Right. And
you
that.
You have to work at it.
Yeah. And
you have
that,
to do good work.
That is.
Saved by faith alone.
That is Pelagianism or semi-Pelagianism and is a heresy. Here is the thing. It depends on what point in time that you look at the Catholic Church as to what they believe. Going way back, say, before 700, before 800, the teachings of the Catholic Church are very similar to Protestantism now. Believe it or not.
That's because that was before the printing press. The printing press is arguably the greatest invention of all time.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, people came out with all the thousands and thousands of Bibles were produced all over Western Europe. And everybody got their own Bible and started interpreting it their own way.
Right, but
that's what gave birth to Protestantism.
Well, that is what gave birth to Protestantism, I think, in to a large extent. But you also have Martin Luther, who is he's an extraordinarily, an obsessive individual who takes everything to the nth degree and feels like it's not covered. It's, in his sin, he was still... racked with guilt. He felt like what he was being taught was not true. He goes and challenges his superiors. It ends up creating a debate in the church, and they ultimately reject his point. But there is actually some changes that were started by this thing that he did that affected the church. There was a counter-reformation. So, I mean, here's the problem. You've got to be careful. Here, hold on.
Hold on.
You've got to be careful that you don't deify the church. What's your answer to that?
I'm sorry. Restate that.
You've got to be careful not to deify the church, which is, I think, the Catholics come close to doing, because the church ultimately becomes this thing without error.
I completely agree with that. I study the parables of Jesus Christ almost on a daily basis. His parables, they're just...
Yeah, fantastic.
Oh my gosh, they're so full of wisdom.
Uh-huh.
If you could just live that way.
Marty, I got another call. Can you call back next hour?
All right. Thank you, sir.
Thanks. Thanks for the call to Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Hi, Kelly. This is Chris.
What's up, Chris?
Hey, good morning. Yeah, I just wanted to add on something what Marty was talking about. I am Catholic.
Right.
And some things that, you know, I guess some questions that you had. One thing about the Catholic Church is that, you know, it's the, you know, the original church. I mean, you have Protestantism, which basically spun off, borrowed ideas, you know, took their own compasses, maps, and so to speak, you know, and built their own ships and went off. When it comes to becoming a Catholic, a good Catholic, a practicing Catholic, of course, what you were saying is, it's practicing a sacrament. It's being obedient.
Right.
Being obedient to God. I mean, it's a discipline. And the other part of it is, you know, there's an importance of being obedient to God, or being obedient to the church, and staying on that fine line.
Uh-huh.
You know, staying in that state of grace.
Yeah. But now when the Catholic Church says good people from other faiths can be saved, I mean, certainly they're not practicing the sacraments.
No, but the thing is, there's a difference between when a person who is, these are individuals who were not in the Catholic faith. I mean, I'm not sure how that's going to work. You know, I've heard others say, well, you know, it's the freeway, it's the fast track,
uh-huh,
whatever it is. I'm not sure how that exactly works, but the thing is, it's like that being with the Catholic faith and in practicing it and being obedient and staying in that state of grace, you know, there is something to that.
So,
you know, I do not buy into the fact that I think there's been an interpretation that, you know, that if you're not Catholic, then you're not going to go to heaven or... I mean, I've heard some other people say that, and that's pretty extreme.
Yeah, that is extreme, especially when the church itself is teaching that good people go to heaven regardless of their faith. And I believe, I'd have to do some research on this, but I believe it's possible for a good atheist to go to the Catholic heaven, which sounds totally ridiculous, but I'm going to have to do some research. But things are trending in that way. We're out of time. Do you want to call back next hour?
I got to finish getting ready, but I just wanted to clarify some things.
Oh, I do appreciate it. Great call, Chris. Thanks, and have a good day.
All right, thank you.
Bye. All right, folks, take you out of here with a little bit of Missing Persons. Hopefully you'll be missing me. 6:59 for all the good reasons, all the right reasons. 6:59, Kelly O'Connell. We'll be back after a break on the hour, and we're gonna tear it up next hour. Good morning, 7:06. Let me look at your headlines here. Getting a lot of texts. And Death Row Radio, one more day. Houston under curfew, rain threat over. Fake ICE agents are ordering evacuations. Trump tours Texas devastation. Divided USA embraces floods as chance to pull together as one people. Shivering child found clinging to drowned mom. That's so sad. How is that possible? How is it possible the mom died, but the baby lived, you know? Bridges and roads failing. Pentagon prepping 30,000 National Guard troops to enter Houston. Life sentence delivered to looters. Harvey makes landfall along Louisiana-Texas border. Now, here's one of the things that I found really aggravating. Media is politicizing the event and blaming global warming for the storm and making fun of Republicans. And, you know, speaking of religion, global warming is a religion. It's part of a religion, and it can't be disproved. One article that I read said one-third of the rain total in these hurricanes is from global warming. How would you possibly, you know, that's the problem with these type of scientific cults, that they can't be disproved. No matter how many times you find people cheating and making up information to prove global warming, there, you know, you can't disprove it to any of these people. And they think they're the scientific ones, you know. New tropical threat taking shape in the Atlantic. Little Kim Jong-un is going to be launching more rockets. He got a kick out of shooting a rocket over Japan. Rachel Maddow, number one in cable. Mysterious jets flying over Philly were Saudi Arabian aircraft taking part in a exercise. Lady calls 911 to complain about the bad meth that she bought. Woman found dead. Was speaking of Catholicism. Woman found dead with rosary beads stuffed in mouth. And all right, so we were talking about Catholicism versus Protestantism and getting a lot of heated responses, but the Catholic Church has no official, well, that it's not quite true. The Catholic Church accepts evolution if it's proven to be true and says there's no divergence between science and faith. The Catholic Church also teaches that mankind was created through a special act of creation, which would seem to get rid of the purpose of having evolution in the first place. But the Catholic Church also does accept good atheists. Pope Francis says atheists can do good and go to heaven as well. So, I mean, at some point, if you're Catholic, you have to ask yourself, what's the point of being Catholic if you can get to heaven through other faiths or through no faith at all? What is the point of the church? And I think that, especially in this Pope Francis, his politics, his number one, he has invested his religion with politics, and number two, he is really, he takes things farther than anybody else. He said, who are we to judge a gay priest, for example? And it wouldn't be any business of his. So anyway, not to get off on him, but it seems like he's got some Marxist ideas. But it was Pope Pius who opened the door for evolution. But this particular pontiff is pro-evolution and pro the Big Bang. So, and this is according to Smithsonian Magazine. All right, so the differences between Protestantism, you know, Protestantism is really, it was articulated by Martin Luther and John Calvin and these type of folks, all kinds of different theologians weighed in. But Marty is right. When the Bible in the vernacular became available, that brought about a widespread explosion of learning that the world, I don't think the world has ever seen the likes of the revolution, the intellectual revolution that was the result of the Reformation. So we're still living off of it, really. And, but you know, I guess the main question that we have to deal with, since we're talking about big ideas, big things on the last days of the show, the apocalypse of the show is nigh. Tomorrow is the last day, is whether there's a God, and then what would be the result of taking that position. And I was saying yesterday that the first thing that I think you have to do is take religion seriously as a study and find out what other religions believe. We were talking yesterday about Hinduism and Buddhism and everything. And the Eastern religions are philosophies. They're technically a philosophical system. You know, there's 40,000 sacred books in Hinduism, but none of them claim to be the words out of God's mouth, like what the Bible has in it. And I was suggesting, if you thought there was a God that created a universe, that would be the direction that you would head in, because it is the statement of the people that believe that there was a God outside of the universe who created the universe, outside of space and time, creates the universe. And then I was pointing out yesterday that the religions and the priesthoods of the ancient pagans, the Romans and the Greeks and all the other religions, they didn't have the concept of revelation. They didn't have within their ideas the possibility of some God, because they were polytheists. They had many gods, and the gods were broken up into areas of activity. A god of wine, you know, god of thunder, god of the ocean, a god of hunting. So that's not really how we perceive God. So there, the idea of a God that created everything from outside of the universe would not really have registered with them. The Romans, who were not as deep philosophically as the Greeks, of course, but the Romans had their gods, and their gods, there was no explanation where the gods came from. They existed from the beginning of Rome, but there was no investigation into that, how that had occurred. And Colanges, who wrote the magnificent book, The Ancient City, said that the Roman religion had evolved from the worship of the family. And in the 12 tables, there was a law, the famous Roman book of laws or set of rules, which every Roman child was supposed to memorize. We don't have a complete copy of it, but we know what was in it. One of the laws was you could not keep the dead in your house. You couldn't keep your parents in your house, because that's what these religions tended to do. Deification of the elders. So in any event, the question is there a God? So let's take a little break here. And 523-1450, anything else you want to talk about is fine. And I know that at some point Frankie is going to call up and start ranting and raving and yelling about how stupid religion is. So just gird your loins for that, so to speak. We'll be right back. 523-1450 and 805-6180. Kelly O'Connell Show. Second to last day, Death Row Radio.
Take a death to learn what a life is worth.
All right. So, and I've got a story for you just before we get into that. You know, this guy, Rex Tillerson, was running, was it Exxon? And he was kind of plucked out of obscurity, if you can be an obscure CEO of one of the world's largest corporations. And he was given the job to be the Secretary of State. Now, he has recently stated that America stands for American values and that the president articulates his own values. I was absolutely astounded when I saw that. And I know that this guy, speaking of religion, is an evangelical Christian, but, you know, there are so many people who are jumping at the chance to be disloyal. And I think there is something wrong with the administration to where, you know, Donald Trump is not firing, for example, people who are leaking. He should have cleaned out that nest of rats, all of those people in the White House and in the administration that were holdovers, dead enders, that would have gotten rid of a lot of the leaks. Some of the leaks are coming out of his own team. Rex Tillerson is a nobody who apparently has fallen in love with himself, and he's a newbie at government. But he's willing to say that I disagree with the president and I'm a better man than the president. That doesn't help the presidency. It gives a lot of fuel to the president's critics. It doesn't really achieve anything for Rex Tillerson other than if he wants to get fired, which I think he should be fired. I mean, I don't care who you're working for. That person signs your paycheck. You owe them some loyalty. Number one, you don't have a right to establish your own thing while working for somebody else, your own total independence. That's absurd. And Gary Cohn, who's the head of his economic team, has said something similar. I don't think it is that Trump is uniquely evil. I think things have changed so much in this culture that loyalty is not really favored anymore. It's not, you know, I just honestly don't get where a lot of these people are coming from. Somebody plucks you out of complete obscurity and gives you the top job in the government next to the president, and at the first opportunity that you have, you cheap shot him. That's, to me, not a sign of really having your act together. I think that Tillerson should be fired. He's a nobody, and you can find somebody like Newt Gingrich to step in, somebody who has a little more gravitas. Anyway, all right, getting back to the topic, the most important question in life is what? Most important question in life, I would argue, is whether there's a God, because everything in your life would be affected by that. In the same way as your politics. Politics is a huge decision, because then it will dictate a lot of the answers to the life's problems. Politics has a lot of answers to positions, public policy, how to frame your understanding of society, human nature, all these different things. And religion is a step higher above that. So what are the chances that there's a God in the universe? And I say, you're looking at a universe that is now understood to be 2 to 10 times bigger than we thought it was just a year or two ago. 200 billion or 1,000 billion galaxies, each one with a 100 billion stars. I mean, the universe is on a practical level, from a practical viewpoint, infinite. So did the universe invent itself? That's one issue that you can look for from science and ask yourself. Another issue is the Goldilocks universe phenomenon. The universe where we're at, the part of the universe, the solar system that we're in, and the universe itself has 200 or 300 elements that if you changed them just slightly, it would mean life couldn't exist. So what are the chances? And you could use the laws of probability, the rules of probability, to find out what the chances of that happening were. the chances are so infinitesimal as to be on a mathematical level to be impossible to happen by chance. So what they did is come up with the multiverse. The multiverse is the idea that there's an infinite number of universes out there. And then this one, just by roll of the dice, happens to be friendly for life. Now, there is no independent evidence for this, but it solves a problem. It solves a problem that is having to do with the issue of the extreme unlikeliness of the universe self-generating. And the kind of universe, so the angle of the planet, the size of the planet. If the planet was much bigger or smaller, if we were closer or farther from the sun, if, you know, there's just, I could get a list of these things for you, but the upshot is that the chances of that happening are, on a practical level, zero. Now, there could be a multiverse out there, and I was talking about Hindu cosmology. In Hinduism, there's an infinite number of universes that are being created and are existing and then going out of existence. So, I mean, oddly enough, a lot of Hinduism comports with a lot of modern scientific theories. But if you're a betting person, do you bet on the idea that the universe is self-generated? Now, also, if life evolves, if it erupts on Earth, how does it start? Because we still have never started life in a laboratory from nothing, even with gaming the system. But let's just say that life starts like the primordial pond, the Uri Miller experiment, where amino acids are kind of, or this primordial pool is sitting there and gets hit by lightning, and then life kind of crawls out of it. Life has started by that, has been disproved. The Uri Miller experiment is disproved in terms of what the conditions on Earth were like X number of years ago. But let's just say that life did start. How did life go from being a tiny one-celled organism or a virus, whatever it was, and as it grows and gets bigger, how do living things develop a conscience or a mind? Where does that come from? And then to get to the piece de resistance, human beings, where do human beings get their conscience from? Our unique ability to contemplate ourselves, to do the Hamlet, holding up a skull, to be or not to be. I mean, to be able to contemplate philosophy and theology and create works of art, Bach and Mozart and Rembrandt and Michelangelo, to do the poetry of Shakespeare and John Donne, and to be able to contemplate our existence and build societies and educate ourselves and to be conscious of each other and to communicate. Communication alone is absolutely a staggering achievement, and communication is baked into the cake, according to and I'm going to try to remember the name of this guy that he's very popular to hate, but Noam Chomsky proved that language is an innate skill. Where did that innate skill evolve from? Where did plants evolve? How did plants, within the context of from when life started, some life went into animals, some life went into plants. How did plants evolve? And where did gender come from? The ability to sexually reproduce, how would that possibly occur randomly? That alone seems like such an extraordinary stretch. If there was evolution, where are the missing links? Not between the humans and apes, but between any particular animal. I'm aware of no history of showing how one animal evolved into another animal. We see animals that we say are halfway, you know, the chickens are related to the dinosaurs, et cetera, et cetera. But I'm not aware of the record of any fossil evidence connecting any two species together. Animals, according to the Cambrian explosion, seem to appear out of nowhere fully developed. And you go to the Burgess Shale in Canada and you see from the tiniest animals to the most developed, they just appear. There is no evolutionary record there. There's just a fossil record. So, and how do human beings develop this idea of immortality? Every society has the idea of immortality. We believe in a God. We have a religion. We have rites. We bury our dead. We mark them as special. We have this instinct for immortality that is baked into all of us as well. Where did that come from? How did that evolve? How would that evolve? And every single thing that you ask where it came from, an evolutionist will say that helped us survive, which is a non-answer, right? I mean, you could speculate as how a particular thing would help you to survive, but if everything is labeled under something that helps us survive, it's not really an explanation. It's a category. So where did the idea of religion, how did religion, the theory, how did we develop a consciousness? How did we develop the ability to develop information and store it and do research and burgeon our knowledge? And then every society that we've ever studied has had a cult in it or had a religion. How did that practice start off? Why do people believe in a God naturally and aspire towards religion? And what happens to humans after death? Are the Hindus correct in reincarnation? What happens to the immortal soul? Is it immortal? So anyway, all of these ideas would tend to encourage a number of people to believe in God. We're going to come back, and at some point we're going to talk to Bev Courtney, who's come on for one of the last shows to talk about an exciting new breakthrough in our campaign. 523-1450 and 805-6180 to text Kelly O'Connell. Feel free to bring it on. We'll be right back.
Your brothers are all older, and they take it in their stride. The world's a little colder, manhood on their side.
Like messages in a bottle, I'm getting the last texts. Not the first time Rex undermined Trump. I agree, fire him. Many Republicans are turncoats like Benedict Arnold. Shame on them all. They're disgusting, self-centered cowards that don't give a damn about this nation. I hear you. I feel you. Like the oil pipeline, we need to reroute floodwaters with piping. And it's doable. Don't get caught up. All right, there's somebody who sent me 1,000 texts, but the upshot was that heaven is going to be on earth. It's going to be the new Jerusalem. Did I know that? Had I ever heard of that idea because I was a Catholic, which I had just addressed? I'm not Catholic, and believe it or not, I've heard of the idea, but I do appreciate someone trying to take me by the pinky and lead me towards the truth. Now, person also says the Pope is a joke. What if the Pope tells jokes? All right, here's another message in the bottle. The secrets of our origins may be held in our hippocampus, the part of our brains that hold our memories. You've got a hippo in your campus. Did you know hippos wound more people in Africa than any other animal? Is that funny? Like running into Rosie O'Donnell at the refrigerator, making a dive for the door. I wish Amazon would take over meds like insulin, then the prices would go down. And Whole Foods is reducing their prices by about 50%. Does that mean that they were overvalued? You know, what they were selling was 50% over what it should have been? Maybe the kid clinging to the mom, maybe the mom hit her head. And then we have a few choice insults from Frankie, the wind-up atheist. All right, so in any event, that's kind of a little bit of an argument for the existence of God. And there are others, the accidents of history, the miracles that appear to occur on a regular basis, and a lot of different things like that. So in any event, we do have Bev Courtney here. She's got something so exciting to tell us, and told her that she could come on a second to last show. Good morning, Bev Courtney. How are you doing today?
Good morning.
All right, so let's get right to it. You had an idea. We talked about the problem of illiteracy in this community. I especially thought of the illiteracy in the government around here, but I think you want to help those kids. You came up with an idea, and what was the idea?
That we would have an advocacy program for volunteer advocacy program for teaching children in the community how to read. Just take it in the people's own hands and help them. So, and I thought that it could be called Success for Learning. And when I schooled my children, I always really enjoyed those little ABC workbooks with the pictures and the graphics. And my kids really liked them, and they would just grab those and work through them by themselves. And it taught them to read really actually well, and they enjoyed it. And so it's an easy thing to do. It's to teach a child their ABCs, and you could just do it with a piece of paper and a pencil. And anyway, I thought I could just get the people that I know that are educators and that are concerned about the children's future, and I'll call it Success for Learning, because I know that once you teach a child how to read, that they can conquer the rest of the world, basically.
All right, so you think that reading is the foundation for success?
Yes, absolutely.
If you can't read, you're not going to stay in school.
True enough, and if you can read and you don't stay in school, you can still read and teach yourself. You can read history, you can read about physics, you can read everything. There's nothing that you cannot do once you read.
All right, you said that there was something like 70% illiteracy in this community?
Yes.
How can we crack that? How can we break it down through this program?
Yeah, an army of volunteers.
How would it work?
Well, I was thinking about reaching out to the churches, because they have classrooms already. They have people who would be willing to volunteer. And not only churches, but maybe some other civic groups. Like, well, there's some good civic groups. I'm not that familiar with that. Many of them, but who is the one that did the teen that honors the teens that are successful in school?
The Lions Club or whatever.
Was Mayor's for Teen Challenge or something like that.
Uh-huh.
So if he can do that, this would be even more wide-reaching, more far-reaching.
And so your hope is to get these volunteers to go into the community and now is it just for kids? Can an adult who wants to learn how to read join too?
If they want to learn how to read, yes.
Okay, and so what would the volunteers go from house to house? I mean, how would you find people that wanted to learn how to read?
Well, you have to get the word out there. You make flyers, you put notices in the newspaper. The churches themselves can have their people who volunteer and announce it. And then the people in the churches have neighbors. And so word of mouth can actually go pretty far. Flyers,
and
newspapers.
Who's going to pay for this?
Well, it shouldn't cost that much. It just, flyers and those little school books. I suppose if you order them in bulk, they're not going to be very expensive.
And how many people in this community do you think would be willing to volunteer for something like that?
I'm not sure about the numbers of the people. I know there's about 150 churches.
Uh-huh.
And that's a lot.
Uh-huh.
In every community,
and
in every neighborhood.
If each church had about 100 members, 50 members,
Right.
that is a lot of people. And how could somebody who is interested in this get involved?
Well, I'm going to have a meeting with the people that are willing and able to help implement it and get the word out. And so anyway, you can always send me an email at teamcourtneylc3@gmail.com or simply call me 642-1003 if you're interested in being on the ground level. 575-642-1003.
642-1003. All right. So what you came up with this idea, and what are people saying with the people that you shared the idea with?
They loved it.
Uh-huh. Now, wouldn't it be exciting if there were other groups that wanted to get involved as well, you know?
Of course. Anybody that is willing to sacrifice their time.
And what is the goal? What do you guys, what is your goal in terms of percentage of people you want to get trained to read?
Well, if it we get this going, then you're going to affect the families.
Yeah.
And you're going to have children that can learn to read, and you can help encourage people to take their own initiative and to be active in their own responsibility to teach their children.
So what percentage is your goal to, what of the 70% of the people that don't read, what percentage would you like to teach to read, to drop it down?
Not less than 20%.
That would make an amazing impact. I think that would be a bigger deal for the community and for the economy than any other program I've ever heard of. That's an amazing idea, Bev.
Yeah, with all of the resources we have, there's no reason for our kids.
Now, what if somebody's listening, they're an atheist, they're a Frankie, they're a Democrat, maybe they're not, wouldn't traditionally want to be involved with a Republican.
This is not Republican.
This is
a mom.
Yeah, all right. And you had said to me the other day, people before politics, right?
Of course,
What does that mean?
I raised my family in my district. And so I'm pretty intimately aware of it. And there's, you know, things that concern them. They want their kids to have good schools, good education, and they want safety and security for the same kids.
Uh-huh.
So they're our future.
Okay.
They're our future. And I want our communities in, this is America, and we have resources, we have wealth. And we need to invest it in the future.
I hear you. Well, let's take a break here. Congratulations on your idea. It's very exciting. Bev Courtney with her. And what's the name of the program?
Success for Learning.
Success for Learning. And it is a program to get people out into the community and take on the 70% illiteracy rate that we have. That was, I guess, the number was put in the Sun News. And to do it not on the public dime, right? This would be a privately funded enterprise. All right. We'll be right back, folks. Of Missing Persons, we'll be right back. Kelly O'Connell, 746. It's Kelly.
Kelly, great show today. But I got a quick question for you about your new blog.
Yeah.
Will you be taking live calls in, or is that?
Yeah, there's a call that you can take in calls on the blog.
Okay. Will it be at the same time?
Well, I mean, I'm trying to get more sleep, so I think what I'm going to do is,
I hear you,
for a week or two, post some recent shows on the blog. And then start getting up in the morning again and maybe doing an hour, start off with an hour.
Okay. I'm looking forward to it. So,
okay.
Keep up the good work.
Thank you.
Have
right.
a good day.
You too. Okay, we're here with Bev Courtney. and she's got an exciting new program, and the program is called what?
Successful Learning.
And it's an advocacy program. It's a teaching program for the illiterate population. I would assume you're going to focus on the youth?
Yes, the children before third grade, which is where the problem is.
Okay. And how many volunteers are you hoping to get?
150 churches. What if we had 1,000?
So one out of 100 people in Las Cruces could help revolutionize the community.
Right.
All right. And you don't have to have any political orientation to help out with this, or right? You don't have to be religious.
Of course not.
Yeah. Okay.
No, this is just.
So John Locke says reading. John Locke says that the purpose of government is to increase men's freedom. So, and men and women, what is the purpose of government in your opinion? Local government.
To provide peace and security, and to promote the welfare of the people.
To make life better.
Yeah, and keep, you know, peace and security represents the law. So they are to do the law so that it makes possible for a large amount of people to dwell together peacefully.
Okay, so if people want to help out with your campaign and help get this thing into practice, what would they do?
They could call me at 575-642-1003 or send me an email at teamcourtneylc3@gmail.com.
Okay. All right. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you, Kelly.
Beth Courtney,
appreciate
folks.
Your willingness.
Sure. All right. Some more texts, folks. I'm one of millions of former Catholics who left Catholicism, protesting its many non-biblical doctrines and practices, including 600 years of Inquisition, torture, and killing of Jews, Christians, and Jewish Christians. The Apostle Paul taught that if one wants forgiveness and new eternal life, one should simply pray in repentance towards God and faith in our Lord Jesus Christ, Acts 20:21. All right. Another text. God made... Oh, okay. Little naughty word there. Okay. Here is... There's a DACC adult literacy volunteer group up and working out of DACC. Does Bev know about that? Maybe the two groups could join forces and save a lot of footwork, anything to get people reading. The problem is I'd have never heard of anybody going out into the community and doing any literacy work. And the fact of the matter is that with so many illiterate people in the community, how could there be such a – how effective is the program? So – that's what I would ask. So anyway, we have one more show tomorrow, and whatever you guys want to talk about, I will have my own set of talking topics, not talking points, but talking topics. And so whatever is the last most important things to you guys, but obviously we can continue the religious discussion, the God question, what needs to be changed, what you'd like to change in the community. And so people are calling me Blog Talk Radio. Write this down. You're going to need a computer, which you can set up just like a radio, Blog Talk Radio, BlogTalk Radio. It's a website. And then Kelly O'Connell would be another search item that you'd put in. So you go to Google and put in Blog Talk Radio and Kelly O'Connell all together if you want. And no, you don't have to put any commas or anything else, quotation marks or anything. And it will bring up my webpage. Now, that webpage, every day for the last 5 years, I have used it to simulcast, which means that I'm broadcasting as I'm on the air live here in the local radio. I'm also broadcasting at the same time out of this computer here. I'm broadcasting into the internet. And so that's called a podcast, and you can listen to it live right now, but in the future, that's where you can listen to it live, or you can go back and get a recording of the show. And I think what I'm going to do is take a little break. I think I will post maybe a couple of shows for a week or two just to get some rest. That's my main complaint in life. And then we can carry it on. And I don't, like I say, I don't know what the future holds. I don't know what, if somebody else takes over AM radio, if they would want me to come on or anything, but there's a market out there, as you can tell by listening right now. We have a call. Thanks for the call to Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
You cannot be serious. Rex Tillerson is 100% right. He's not some kind of moron mindless.
Blah, 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 blah. All right. So, okay. You gave your opinion. You never give any proof or facts for your opinion, but thank you. Anything else?
What are you talking about, no facts? Where is there not a fact?
It's a statement. Hold on a second. You made a statement. You drew a conclusion. You didn't put any material in there for anybody to agree with you. All you're saying is that basically Rex Tillerson's a good guy and anybody who disagrees is a moron. That's not an argument. It's a conclusion. Are you unaware of that? Are you totally unaware of that?
What?
Are you totally unaware of how to do basic analysis or make an argument? If A then B, B then C, A therefore C? It's called a syllogism. It's called a syllogism. All right, you're highly highly educated, intelligent. Thanks for the call. Have a wonderful day. We'll see you back for one last insult fest tomorrow. All right. So that's Frankie. That is. It's like he gives a textbook class on liberalism every day. Shout your conclusions at people, and anybody who disagrees is just a complete bimbo. All right, so we have, what's the saying by Robert Frost? Many miles to go before we sleep. We have a call. Thanks for the call to Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Kelly, it's Kathy. You know, I completely disagree with you on just about everything, but, you know, I listen to you. You ought to listen to Frankie. I mean, he has... I'd like to have his opinion.
Kathy, he doesn't. Kathy, listen. He doesn't offer an argument. He just states his conclusion. Don't you have a problem with that?
Well, no, because I listen to you. I mean, a lot of times you just state your opinion. Your opinion about Tillerson is that he's a jerk and ought to be fired. You know what? The president's a jerk. He's the one that ought to be fired.
All right.
There's people standing up against him, even in his own administration. He is not what this country is about.
Thank you. We're out of time. Yeah, thank you. And we're out of time. Thank you. All right. Beware of opinions. Thanks for tuning in today, and I hope you have a wonderful day. We'll meet one last time tomorrow. Death Watch Radio, Kelly O'Connell.